listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, episode 99, Minions. It is what it is. Just go with it.
Welcome to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, Don Bluth, and everything in between. We're your hosts, Morgan Stradlink, Chelsea Robson, and Mason Smith. Say hello, my fellow minions.
Hey, we
do. I don't know how to do a minion.
Papagena.
I don't know how to do that. Oh, we should have Minions Day where we all speak in Minionese.
That's what we're going to do. This entire episode is now a foreign film.
Yep.
Excellent. So for those of you who are new to the Animation Addicts Podcast, welcome. This is a show where fellow animation fans like yourself to come together and we talk about what we love, which is animation. Today, we are going to talk about the newly released animated film, Minions by Illumination Entertainment, which is actually a third film in this sort of Despicable Me series. It is a prequel to Despicable Me. It came out just barely last week and we are ready to go and review it. Mason actually just saw it this morning, so he is fresh
out of the Cinemark. In fact, I got a yellow ticket stub the first time I ever got one, so I was like, it's a good day. Everything is coming together. Yeah, that's right. I don't watch advanced screenings for films just because College Station is like a wasteland as far as like advanced screenings for films. So I saw it with the common people. As I did, and I had a little deja vu from the day that Shannon and I watched Monsters University because they were, I was the only adult who was there alone. I'm sure it looked really creepy. Yeah! Insert screaming children sound effects here because that's pretty much all the commentary that I got during the film. And so, by the way, this episode is practically brought to you by our wonderful Roto Nation patrons because, several weeks ago, we reached our patronage milestone to where we are now able to review these films straight out of the theater. And so you can expect good dinosaur podcasts later this year and all other the major releases for animated films. Normally, in the past, we had only done like one or two per year. And so we shout out and a big thank you to our Rotoscopers patrons. And if you want to join the awesome Roto Nation, then go to rotoscopers.com/Patreon or rotoscopers.com/patron. And you can learn more about being a patron of the podcast and the site and the YouTube. It supports all of that.
Yeah, actually, we just hit our $250 milestone, which is we are...
Thunder
Bring tube. On that Thunder Tube, which means that we are now going to be live broadcasting the show. Technically, we should be live broadcasting this one, but we are still having a few technical difficulties, so we're getting that worked out, and hopefully either the next show or the show after that will have everything ready for you guys, so that way every show here on out will be live. We normally record Monday nights, so stay tuned to the website and the podcast, because we will be letting you know the typical time to check in, where to go, so you can check out the live stream and chat along with us and be involved in the live discussion. It's going to be really exciting, and just thank you for bearing with us as we're figuring out a last few little details.
Yeah, absolutely. This is the end of an era, and what better way to round out like our first 99 episodes, y'all?
Woohoo!
I'm excited to move on to the live format. Of course, you can always download the audio and the stream. You know, you can watch it later if you miss it. But wouldn't it be cool to like be part of it live? I mean, you can chat with us. You know, if you do a voicemail, we'll listen to it live, and you can see our reactions. Not just hear our reactions, but see our amazing, pretty, beautiful faces.
He's just talking about himself.
Well, yeah, I got to clear up the acne, but man, you'd think it would go away after all this time, but poof, pizza topping right here.
And on that note, let's talk about something that's also funny. Humor in animated films.
That was funny for another reason.
I hope you understood I was not making fun of your pizza topping acne, but it just, it was too good, I couldn't pass up.
which does not exist, by the way. I'm beautiful in every way.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pie, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the
get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcasts, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
I might as well just open this can now. Minions should not and cannot be compared to Inside Out, which is the latest animated film theatrical release before It. And the humor has a lot to do with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I totally agree. I don't think we should spend this majority of this discussion saying, oh, Inside Out this, Inside Out that. I mean, these are two separate films that just happened to be released within 2 weeks of each other. And so let's just treat them as such. We didn't talk about Minions in our Inside Out discussion. So let's end
Once.
Okay. So here's our one plug for Inside Out. If you haven't seen it, go see it. It's awesome. And back to Minions.
Interesting is how you go into these movies, and like we've kind of talked about this forever, you know, since the beginning, the dawn of the podcast, we've kind of gone into this type of subject, but we've never had a full out Nerdy Couch discussion on why so funny and why aren't there as many serious films in animation?
That's interesting. Which question should we tackle first? All right, real quickly, we'll get it out of the way. Why aren't there many serious animated films? And I think part of it, not all of it, has to do with the stigma that we always talk about the perception, the incorrect perception that animation is a kid's genre or a kid's style, or that animation is for kids. I would hope that we all disagree with that. But there's also the side of that maybe Hollywood executives don't think that a serious animated film will bring in the cash. I don't know.
Yeah,
I can't remember the last theater, the time I went to a theater and saw a not funny or a serious animated film.
A lot of times they're foreign films of recent memory. I think of Persepolis. It's an animated film that's set and grounded in reality, tells about a girl's story growing up, in basically the old Western world, and very serious. There's not a lot of funny moments. I would not call that a funny or humorous film. And I think, you know, the reason that animation has this stigma is because of just the way that it's evolved over the decades. I think, if you look at Walt Disney's films, Pinocchio or Snow White, a lot of those early films from the 40s, I mean, they had funny moments, but they weren't necessarily geared towards children. Now they are. Nowadays, a lot of children watch those films, but back then it was an adult audience. And I think with the 50s and 60s with television animation and Saturday morning cartoons, that really skewed the medium to, okay, children are going to watch cartoons while adults watch live action things. And just nowadays we see that common thought has prevailed, where we see a lot of television shows and cartoons and things on Cartoon Network, for heaven's sake, where it is geared for children for the most part, Adult Swim aside. And a lot of the films reflect that as well.
Well, I agree with your point that it's interesting that animated films like was for adults, and it has evolved to become like seen as a kid-friendly medium, I suppose. And it's not like Minions helps that at all. This one is clearly has a certain type of humor in it that, in my opinion, engages more of the younger audiences. And within that broad style of, the rating board called it was it rude humor or crude humor? What's the difference between rude and crude humor?
Is there a difference? That's
rude is offensive to certain people, and crude is
oil.
Offensive in a haughty humor / sexual way, perhaps.
I think crude is more sexual. Yeah.
Do you think crude is worse than rude?
Yes.
Yeah.
In a way.
All right, rated PG for action and rude humor. All right, so I get the rude humor part. And it's a fine line. This movie isn't necessarily, you know, we use the term fart jokes. I think fart jokes are contained inside rude humor, but I think there's a little bit more to it. You know, if we were to analyze the humor of Minions, you know, obviously you have your slapstick.
Oh, this is straight up Three Stooges. Like, that's all I got from this.
Bonk, bonk, and more bonk.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a theory that slapstick is super effective, Pokemon reference, in the foreign market, you know? Despicable Me 2, which it obviously focused more on the Minions because they were, like, the runaway hit from the first film, it made 62% of its gross outside of the U.S.
Yeah.
You know, there's definitely a correlation between the foreign market and this type of, like, cartoon character, this type of cartoon mayhem.
I think it's also the ease of translation. Mm-hmm. You know, those are one of those things that they just translate so easily.
Lowest common denominator.
Right. I mean, not to put Charlie Chaplin in the rude, crumer, whatever humor way, but it's like Charlie Chaplin was the most famous actor of all time. And all of those countries that didn't understand a word of English, they knew Charlie Chaplin. That's why Alpha Beta Charlie, you know, doing, instead of saying ABC, they grabbed words that everybody knew, and Charlie was one of them. That's how they knew C, Charlie.
Is that really where they got the Charlie designation in the military from?
That is.
I think the reason, you know, slapstick and his sort of humor and comedy style is so effective, like you're saying, is also because it's very visual.
Right.
And visual gags are more easy to translate to across all sorts of mediums without having, yes, there will be different instances where certain cultural things don't translate. I was watching recently the bonus features for Spirited Away, and there were some hand movements that they did which didn't translate to an American audience, and they really couldn't get around it. But I think for the most part, a lot of these things, like hitting someone on the head or whatnot, they do translate.
There's no country where the citizens of that country see someone fall flat on their face and not laugh. Like, there's no country where it's like taboo to do that. Or they're like, I don't know what this gesture means, falling on your face, you know? So that's a very, very good assessment, Morgan, that things like this translate visually to a big audience. And I think a lot of movie making, a lot of family feature entertainment has to do with communicating to as broad an audience as possible.
That and the fact that these movies are so expensive to make. They have to be able. They feel like they have to.
Well, actually,
reach to
actually
that
this
level.
Movie was kind of an exception.
Well,
as we'll learn, Illumination Entertainment's pretty good at that whole budget thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I do understand what you mean. Like, we look at DreamWorks, we look at other studios, not necessarily Pixar, I guess, but like, any studio that wants to communicate to a broad audience, like Chelsea said, wants to make their budget worth it. So yeah, definitely a valid point there.
So, talking about humor in this film, I was reading an article by an interview by John Hamm, and he plays Herb, the husband film.
Isn't he great?
He's so good. I wouldn't even know it was him unless...
I didn't even know it was him, and I, by proxy, watch Mad Men all the time because Shanna's a fan, but...
Me too. And so he has this quote, and he says, and, you know, butts and farts are funny. I'm sorry, but they are, especially when you're a little kid. They're super funny. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that plays in a big auditorium full of people. And you know, seeing this film, I didn't really see this film as having a lot of potty humor, but he's making it seem like there is... so much in this film when there's not. So he loves the two jokes that are potty humor, but he's overplaying how big those are.
All right.
It's like a trivia on IMDb. The original working title was Minions, The Fart Fest. The Fartinic. But yeah, you know, I took notes during the film, and I only counted like one or two real butts in the film, and I remember only hearing one fart. So definitely more slapstick, more rude humor. Okay, I have one final quick question. How should the worldwide community of animation enthusiasts animation lovers, animation addicts, if you will, respond to films that have that animated films that contain rude humor like Minions? How do we react? Because a lot of people stick their nose. A lot of people stick their nose up to it? You know, I was just reading an article on Cartoon Brew talking about how maybe the critics have been overly harsh on Minions, especially with such close proximity to Inside Out.
Yeah, you know, I think we should take it for what it is. This is Minions. It's not like a surprise what these Minions are all about. They're jokesters. They're hilarious. They play pranks on each other. They're funny. They giggle. And, you know,
they fall on their faces a lot.
Trying to elevate Minions to something that it is not. It does nothing good for, you know, the film and critics that criticize it and whatnot, because it is what it is. And if this were a movie, you know, sort of like The Hangover or, you know, any other comedy film with a bunch of guys that was just as rude and crude, people wouldn't care. People would applaud it. They're like, oh, it's so brilliant and so genius. Not saying that this is brilliant or genius, but just trying to make the connection.
Right.
I think because it's an animation, suddenly it's like, oh, you know, it takes a step down. It has to be that way.
Yeah. Did y'all think that Minions was funny in general?
Yes.
I'm going to say yes. Yeah. I mean, there was...
I chuckled at a few parts, definitely.
There's definitely... It was... Go into expecting what it is. Don't expect anything more than it is. Don't put unrealistic expectations, just like in relationships. You shouldn't put unrealistic expectations on anybody, and you should just accept them for who they are.
Interesting. I agree. Okay, in our next Nerdy Couch discussion, I guess we'll have to do adult humor in animated films.
Ooh, yes. I recently came across a college thesis on this, and it's very, very detailed, so it'd be interesting to talk about.
Nice.
On to the main event!
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
Okay, so this is actually our very first Illumination Entertainment film that we have reviewed on the podcast, which is quite shocking. 100 episodes in, we have not gotten around to reviewing Illumination Entertainment's films. And I'm also shocked that we have not done Despicable Me yet, that we're jumping straight to the third in the franchise. But that's okay. So I just wanted to give another Morgan lecture. I'm very well known for these. Talking a little bit about this studio, since it's our first time delving into the studio and their products. So Illumination Entertainment, very interesting. It was founded by Chris Melandry, and he had a prolific career in animation before founding Illumination Entertainment. He actually worked for Disney. He was a producer on Cool Runnings, of all things. And then he jumped over to animation. He was the president of 20th Century Fox Animation, which he helped to usher in the acquisition of Blue Sky Studios. He worked as an executive producer on their films for a number of years, starting with Ice Age and ending with Horton Hears a Who. He then left in 2007 to form Illumination Entertainment, which I think is very impressive. At this time, the animation landscape was getting somewhat crowded. There was Disney, Pixar, DreamWorks, Blue Sky Studios definitely had a few films under their belt. A few other studios were starting to up and come around this time, but it's getting crowded around this time and even more crowded nowadays. So very impressive of him to go and just start his own studio. 3 years later, in 2010, they released their first animated film, which was Despicable Me. Again, another impressive feat, considering a lot of animated films kind of get stuck in this pre-production cycle for a long time. Sometimes it takes 4 to 5 years for a film to finally make it from concept to actual release. So the fact that this was released, you know, within 3 years is impressive. I don't know how long Despicable Me was in you know, pre-production before that. But nonetheless, I applaud him. Now, there is actually a misconception that Illumination Entertainment is a French studio. It is not. If you go and you look at the credits of an Illumination Entertainment film, there it's just flooded with French names. And that is because when Illumination Entertainment was formed, they didn't have their own animation department. Instead, they outsourced to a French visual effects company called MacGuff, and they did the animation for Despicable Me. And then after Despicable Me was released, it was such a huge success that they acquired it in 2011, and as a result, they renamed that animation division Illumination MacGuff. So Illumination Entertainment, it is an American studio, but the studio, the animation division, is based in France currently. They're also one of the directors of Despicable Me was French, and the other co-director was American. So there's that little tidbit for you. Another thing that they are known for keeping costs down in a landscape where a lot of animated films are over $100 million for their budgets. They use lean animation methods and other cost-saving programs to keep the budgets, you know, well below that level. To date, their films have cost between $69 million and $76 million, which is pretty impressive. Actually, Minions, even though it was released most recently, is not their most expensive film. So they have done a wonderful job at being able to keep these costs down and just tell a great story without having to go overboard. And this allows them to have more profits, more margin. And I don't think they're struggling because their films do extraordinarily well.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think it's amazing that they've kept their budget so low because watching Minions today, I really didn't think it looked low budget.
No way.
You know, you can tell the difference between this and like a more indie film that's coming out that maybe doesn't have the talent or the technology behind it. But like the animation was pretty solid and like rendering and lighting quality was really good too. Very much an improvement over Despicable Me 1. And so my hat goes off to these guys.
Absolutely. So the directors of Minions, let's go into this film. Two directors, Pierre Coffin, who is French. And a fun fact about him, he was actually an in-betweener on We're Back. And then the other director is Kyle Balda. He's a CalArts grad. He is the American of the duo. Fun fact about him is he worked as an animator on The Mask for ILM. Then he went on to Weta Digital and then Pixar, and he did a variety of things there. And then came over to Illumination Entertainment, where he was head of layout for Despicable Me.
So this came out, July 10th, day after my birthday. And I was gonna ask, after Despicable Me 2, like, why didn't they go for just like a July 4th weekend release? That would have been perfect.
I don't have my crystal ball. I'm not quite sure about that.
Tell me, management wonder.
There weren't that many films released July 4th weekend this year, were there?
Yeah, I know there were a couple that came out on July 4th. I didn't go see any movies on July 4th weekend because I don't know what was released. Terminator, I guess? But anyway, maybe they didn't want to compete with that.
There may be some degrees of separation they wanted to have between Inside Out, which had been released a few weeks prior.
That is true.
But we don't know. We're just speculating.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so really low budget, and it's doing very, very well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so according to Box Office Mojo, it had the highest opening for an animated 3D film of all time. It had $46.2 million on Friday, which was the biggest animated opening day ever.
Wow.
So let's give a round of applause for the Minions. And its opening weekend, it's just barely, you know, finished up the weekend. It made $115.2 million domestically, which made it the second biggest animated opening of all time. Bow, 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 bow. Just about $6 million behind Shrek the Third, which...
Shrek the what?
Whoops. Shrek the Third, you remember that one?
Yeah, I saw it, unfortunately.
So I'm shocked. You know, I knew this was going to do well, but I didn't think it was going to do that well.
We did not know when we first mentioned it on episode 20 of the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
We were like, maybe it'll be a foreign film because of the whole French studio, I think.
No, I think just because you can't understand.
No, it's because nobody understood.
Chelsea with the surprise entrance.
Hey.
Way back in the day, we talked about this.
You know, going in the Wayback Machine, I pulled up our first articles about this announcement on the website, rotoscopers.com. And our first article was the announcement of the Minion sequel. This was just when we were about 6 months old in our infancy. So we had no comments. The early days.
We were toddlers.
And so I'm like, okay, well, I want to see other people's opinions about this. So I went to the next most recent article, which was in August of 2012, where it was announced that Sandra Bullock would be a character.
Hello.
And we had one comment. Woohoo! And it's from Matthias. And he says, maybe if it's not boring.
Ooh.
Meaning, I'm assuming the question was, will you see this film?
That's great.
Boring it is not.
You know, one thing that I thought was the coolest thing was I realized that minions are actually immortal.
Yeah, that is true.
You know, there is absolutely no evidence throughout the film that they can be killed or that they die.
It's true. And I was looking at it, I'm thinking back to in my, you know, obviously it makes sense. The only way to kill them is to have dip, and dip hasn't been invented yet because that came out with Richard Williams.
Well, you know, talking about this is good material for a Minions sequel because they apparently hold the key to immortality, the fountain of youth that everyone has been searching for.
Wow.
I mean, that's someone should steal the Minions in the next movie and try to harness their immortality. I'm liking it.
I'm watching the first season of Dragon Ball Z while I work out, and so I think Vegeta and Nappa would be all over these guys. All chance for immortality, Nappa! But anyway... I love the beginning. That's Joffrey Rush as the narrator, and he's great.
Was. Yeah, this was the basically the same dialogue that they used in some of the very first trailers for this film.
Oh, that's true.
Hold straight away, which it's the same. Nothing really. Maybe they cut out a few scenes that were maybe cutting it back a little bit or a little bit slow. But for the most part, the first three or so minutes are what we saw in the trailers. And I liked it. I loved how it set it up. We got to see the minions. We got to see them emerge out of the, you know, ecosystem.
The primordial minion soup, if you will.
Absolutely.
Primordial.
But the thing is, like, the intro voiceover for me really solidified this as a kid film.
I think what you're trying to say is that the exposition was very clearly spelled out so that everyone could understand what's going on.
Exactly.
All right. That is a mark of a kid's film, definitely.
Right.
I love all the different quote-unquote villains. I really love the title sequence where they're, like, evolving in the primordial soup and, like, they're just kind of floating in a, you know, with their phalanges over to the nearest organism that... that eats the other organisms.
Most evil.
Yes, the most evil one.
Maybe yes, we want to be with you, and they grab onto his fin and they float away.
Absolutely. And then he crawls out, gets crushed by a T-Rex. The boss! Oh, did you also realize something, that their little eye goggles, they also evolve. Like, at first they're just made out of palm leaves, and then I think they're made out of, like, palm... stock or palm bark.
Interesting.
And then they're kind of like a steampunk looking copper for a while, and then only the three main ones have the chrome goggles from Despicable Me 1.
Is that
by
supposed
the end of
to
the
represent
movie.
The different ages? There's the Stone Age, the Brass Age, the Iron Age.
I guess so. I guess they have their little evolutionary period. Very, very long, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they get upgrades as far as their eyewear, I suppose.
You know what I thought was so cute about the minions? This isn't supposed to be cute. Like, they kill their masters, basically. Because
yeah, they usually cause the downfall of the people they're serving.
They're very competent. They're not very great minions or henchmen, but, you know, Dracula was the greatest one to me, where they're just like, you know, they're so innocent. They just want to wish him happy birthday. And
I love how... they're so, like, happy and eager. They're like, oh, we're going to give them a surprise party. You know, they're kind of like, their body language is like, they're so freaking happy to do it. They have, like, no clue that they're going to kill him by doing this.
So does that make them good henchmen?
Their immortality and the fact that they never seem to get maimed or injured is a good quality.
Yeah, it is.
They don't seem very good at doing evil things. They're just attracted to evil, apparently.
If you could catch a minion Pokemon, would you want him on your team?
I don't know. I'd probably have to sacrifice my Smeargle in which case, yes. That's a risk I'm willing to take.
Expert.
Not my current team right now is pretty boss. But anyway, yeah, Napoleon, they blow him up. I didn't get that part. Is like, was the army chasing after them, or did they just get lost in the fog? But I don't know.
That was funny. And then somehow they end up in Superman's secret sanctum.
Ooh, secret sanctum.
Which I thought was awesome.
Yep, chilling with the Yetis after a while.
Well, and here you also realize their English, their language is so messed up. But I realize it's because they are immortal. They are the start of language. And it's every other language that has then come off of them.
Ooh, could this be like so the
really,
master
it's just
language?
Us that, I think so. I think it is the Adamic language, and that's how it goes.
Oh, you should tweet us if you got that reference. But anyway, I thought it was so interesting how I was able to understand the characters during a movie where most of the dialogue is Minionese. Mm-hmm. You know, I know a little bit of Spanish, so a lot of the more Latin-based languages I could pick up on. But obviously that was a huge challenge for the animators or the story artists, like getting the audience to understand despite the language barrier. But we also talked about how a certain brand of humor translates to a broader audience. And so I guess they already knew how to communicate to as broad an audience as possible. And so Minionese, I guess it actually, I bet it saved them a lot of money in that they didn't have to pay a translator or pay extra voice artists to do all of the Minions dialogue because it's Minionese. You can't translate it.
Right. Well, and I think, honestly, I believe that this one will probably be the most successful outside of the English market because it has so many other languages tied into this. So you have, I got Spanish, English, Russian, I heard, or at least a friend of mine told me it was Russian. I don't speak Russian. Exactly.
And then,
I'm sure there are others. Did anybody other catch any?
There was Italian for sure.
There wasn't any Portuguese. I was severely disappointed.
Oh, that's okay. The world's a better place for it. But yeah, a little bit of French.
Excuse me.
I'm just kidding.
Chelsea, you're just supposed to move on from those jokes because you'll have to edit it out.
Hey, it's that Mason humor. It can leave you in the dust. But yeah, I thought I heard a little bit of German, maybe. I don't know. It seemed more Latin-based than anything. I'm sure there's an interview that I haven't watched that explained, like, the anatomy of... I also looked up a little bit of trivia, and it said that there's supposed to be some, like, Hebrew, maybe even Arabic. And so, like, it's all over the place.
So one really cool thing is Pierre Coffin, who is the director of this movie. He's actually been the director of all of the Despicable Me films. And he has lent his voice to the Minions since the beginning, all 899 of them.
Ooh.
And so he is like huge shout out to him because not only has he done it for the actual voice acting, but for the music as well. And so you hear all these songs of the Minions singing and it's all him.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, not only did you have to, he just spent months in the recording booth, I'm sure. And
Or maybe not that much time because with another actor, if they were doing the voice, you know, he'd have to lead them and guide them the way that
true.
He wanted to be. But since he's the director, he knows what he wants.
Yeah, I bet he did it when he got
so
home
bada
for the
bing,
day.
Bada boom, we're done.
Yeah. That's interesting.
He's like, all right, peeps.
All I'm going to say is this guy, he probably gets a nice hefty paycheck for all of these other gigs, you know, parks that are built and different merchandise.
Oh, yeah, just think of all that stuff.
And McDonald's toys that apparently say the F word.
Merchandise.
They do? Awesome.
Yes, there's big controversy.
That's like the one thing McDonald's has done right in a long time.
Yeah, apparently there's controversy that one of the Minions toys, I mean, they're just speaking Minionese, blah, 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 but there's one that when you tap it, one of its phrases is, what the, you know what? So, yeah, it's the one wearing the toga, so if you head over to your local McDonald's and snag that one because
it's probably
already pulled.
Oh, yeah.
And worth a bundle on eBay.
I'll be like, oh, can I get the vulgar Minion with my Happy Meal? Oh, it's great. Introduce kids to the real world.
It's rude and
totally
rude.
Kidding on that. It's kind of scandalous. But is he really saying the F word, or do people just think that? Is it a take off your clothes
people
with Aladdin
think,
kind
I
of
mean,
thing?
Yeah. People think just because it has the same inflection. But an official statement from McDonald's, and I'm not quoting, I'm just paraphrasing, basically said that they are speaking their own made-up language, and we are sorry that, you know, it has been inferred to sound like a cuss word. That is not what he is saying.
Maybe you should clean up your dirty old minds. I wish you didn't have the devil's red hair. But anyway. Yeah. All right. So I am officially fascinated with Minionese, and I want to learn more about the director/voice talent for the Minions, because it's got to be really interesting. Do they? I wonder if they crank up the pitch in post, or if he does that by himself. Like, I don't know. Does he like inhale a lot of helium for this? But I mean, that's probably obvious. But let's talk about something I do know a lot about, and that's the actual animation itself. I was really impressed by it. I thought that actually, ever since Despicable Me Uno, I've really dug like Illumination Entertainment's quality of animation. And there's three main reasons why I believe their animation is really high quality. One of them is the Minion crowd animation. It's phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they've really figured out how to make like 800 plus minions seem exciting when they're in a crowd. Like, the minions are very unified in what they want, but there's so much individualism if you like look around. Like, in every crowd shot, you can always pick out like a few minions that are just like doing whatever because they're like, they're the dumb ones or they're being distracted or like whatever. And there's always some sort of little tiny joke or like visual gag to pick up on. Do you guys ever get the PSA where, before you go see a movie where the little minion guy is trying to watch a Minions movie and he, maybe it's just a Cinemark thing, but he tries to watch it on his phone. Then he tries to watch it on his tablet and everything keeps breaking and stuff. And finally he gets injured and he's in a body cast and he goes to the theater instead, cause that's like the best place to see a movie. And so there's a whole crowd of minions in this like PSA, or whatever. And they're all watching the movie screen. They're all laughing and stuff. But in the corner, there's like this one tall minion who's like totally unimpressed with everything. And he's just got this like scowl on his face. And he's just looking at everyone like, you're all idiots. And that's what I really like about the minions is the amount of variety in these amazing crowd shots. And, I can't even imagine like how much work it takes to orchestrate crowds like that, where you can look off in the corner and there's a minion who's just doing something completely randoed because he's a silly little minion, but it makes the crowd shot even more real. You know, it's not like they just copied and pasted the keyframes for their run cycles and, you know, and let it fly. But I've always been really impressed with that, and it makes me want to go back and watch Despicable Me 1 and 2 to kind of pick out those tiny little jokes. But also, I really love the animation for, like, the hero characters. Like, Scarlet Overkill and her husband are really entertaining to watch because I guess the animators at Illumination, they've really got down, like, nuanced character animation. Like, you never see any empty space in the characters as acting. You know, there's just tiny little details that give the characters, you know, life and rhythm, like a little twitch in the corner of the mouth or the way their eyes dart around and things like that, and just... you know, timing for slapstick comedy is more difficult than you'd think. Over the past couple of months, I've transitioned from animating for a grad student short film that was very calm and serene and emotional to one that was more action and slapstick, and cartoony oriented. And it's harder than you think to get shots like acrobatics, like characters flipping around and stuff, and then squash and stretch. So I really have to hand it to Illumination Entertainment for really, really cool animation in general.
I think the thing that I liked most about how they used and utilized the minions was which ones they focused on. Like, they went in and they went into Despicable Me 2. And, like, I remember a review Morgan gave of it one time where she was just like, who's this Kevin? Like, he's just always talking to Kevin. Like, what's up with Kevin? And I think that was... it was really smart and really cool of them to, like, go in and establish why Kevin, or, you know, who individual ones were. And if there were to be a leader, it would be this Kevin. And then also Stuart and Bob.
Yeah, here's the thing. I looked online, and I mean, this is yet to be like fact checked, but I think they were saying that the Kevin in this film is a different Kevin from the ones that they mention in Despicable Me 1 and 2, which is real. It's really confusing.
What?
But it makes sense if you have like a crowd of 800, you know, minions with really common names. You're probably going to get a couple of Kevins.
Oh, the old Kevin S, Kevin B.
Oh, yeah.
It's like elementary school all over again.
But I don't take that to the bank yet, but I'm pretty sure that the Kevin in this film is not the same Kevin as is in Despicable Me 2 or 1.
Well, I do know that they, at the very end of the first, or I'm sorry, at the very end of the second, you have, like, them auditioning for another movie.
Oh, right.
And... the Kevin that was used, or, you know, one of them, like, The characters that were used in those were said to be Kevin, Bob, and Stuart. Their character designs were slightly different. Like, for example, the eye color of, I think it was Bob, he had the two different eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, his eye color wasn't quite as distinct. And then, like, there are little things that they hadn't really focused on or they hadn't really determined by that point. But, so, yeah, I mean, I guess they're kind of in there. But anyway.
I have an update.
Update.
We need update music whenever someone says something. Kevin in Despicable Me 2, according to despicablemewikia.com, gotta love those wikias, is the exact same minion that's in Minions.
Oh, well, there he is.
So there you go.
Excellent. Okay, then.
But, and this is a true prequel, isn't it?
Yes. Kevin, yes, wasn't Kevin the one who turned into the purple minion?
I believe so.
Yes.
Wait, wasn't that just
He's
all
had a
of
hard
a...
life.
Wasn't that just Penguins of Madagascar? Ah, never mind. Let's not go into that.
But they had cool, like, little side things. Like, you had the ukulele, which was like a normal guitar, but it still had four strings, which I thought was cool. And then Banana, which I read an interview with Pierre, and he said that that was kind of the moment that they thought, okay, minions are going to take over, was when one of the minions just came up and said, Banana! And everybody in the audience was like hooked on it from then. I was like, oh no.
There's always money in the banana stand.
Always money in the banana stand.
I think they did a great job differentiating these three different characters. I mean, yes, they're minions, but they do look differently. One is the tall one, one is the short one, and one has one eye. But they did have different characteristics and personalities. Kevin was the leader. Bob was the cute little shy one.
Oh, Bob is the little sweetheart.
I loved Bob. He was my favorite minion.
Stuart was really funny because he the whole time he's just kind of like, what? Oh, whatever. Okay. I'm a rock star. One thing I thought was refreshing is that they didn't like over dramatize this like side character epic film with, you know, infighting that needs to be resolved.
Yeah, that's true.
Did you ever see the Rugrats movie where Tommy, like, there's a part where Tommy almost like murders his little brother by spilling banana baby food on him so that monkeys will kill him? That's literally part of the movie. And there's none of that here. All the minions are very unified in what they want. But at the same time, they have their own unique personalities. And in a weird way, I think that's what makes the minions very appealing or very relatable to a broader audience, is because we see ourselves or other people in the minions. Like, yeah, sometimes I'm a little like Bob, you know, not very bright, but I've got a great heart. Or sometimes I have to take charge like Kevin. I don't know. This could just be a Mason theory, but I think there's something in there on how they're unified. They're almost like cells in one organism, but they all have different purposes.
Yeah,
I don't know.
There you go.
Might be worth thinking on, stewing over.
Of course, so now at this point, they've discovered that they need to go and find their, you know, a true new boss.
The baddest of the bad.
Like, I felt like the exposition was kind of long, and it kind of drew out a little bit too long. Like, when they went into the store, it was cute and all, but I was like, do we really need this? I don't know. But that's when they see the commercial about, of course, VillainCon. And, yeah, we need to go to that.
Woo! VillainCon!
And on the way there, they find the crazy burglar family, which...
Loved them.
Gotta love them.
They were my favorite parts of this film. They were so wacky, so goofy, so over the top. Very, very enjoyable. I mean, I want a spin-off movie about them.
Crazy burglar family?
It's just, yeah, you think that they're, you know, just this normal, happy family that's just naive enough to pick up some minions as hitchhikers, and oh, cool, where are you going? But then they have just totally do a 180 on you, and they put on the mask.
Stretch your legs a bit.
They go rob a bank.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And you know what I loved about this movie? It was so over the top. Like, it knew that, okay, this is a movie about bad guys. Like, so we're just going to play off bad guys and everything that bad guys do and not cast judgment. We're just going to make it, you know, portray it, and it's going to be funny.
They are what they are.
So I was at a physical therapy appointment, and a bunch of people were talking about how they saw Minions, and I just kind of stayed quiet. I just wanted to hear, like, how their discussion would go, you know, them, the people. And it was just funny because they were saying, like, oh, yeah, me and my 21-year-old son saw it. Like, I can't believe that like two old guys went and saw this movie, and that was just like slapping my head, like, oh, another animation is for kids stereotype. Okay, where else is this going to go?
A regular Philistine.
And then another person was saying like, oh, I was just, you know, I wasn't sure if this movie should be for my kids. I wanted to almost take them out. You know, when that family at the very beginning robs the bank, I didn't know what to
brother.
Do. I was like, oh, come on, your kids are fine.
Come on.
So that was my discussion at the physical therapy office. And at that point, I didn't even want to like chime in and be like, I have an animation website. I love animated films. Just like, I know this is too hilarious. I'm just going to sit here and be quiet.
You know, I like the little, of course, this is in the 1960s. I like the little joke about Orlando being this like bleak, deserted swampland before a certain tycoon built a certain theme park in Bay Lake, and everything blew up from there. Of course, I'm talking about the Dolly Parton experience, but
I'm going to Dollywood.
well, it's not Dollywood because that's in a different state, but there's a Dolly Parton show in Orlando.
Oh, is there really?
Or do I have it totally twisted? Yeah, I just remember why. That was like the one thing, other thing I remember, which I did not go to, but the one thing I remember from my Orlando trip when I was like in high school. But yeah, Villain Con! I love all the diverse villains and also fans of villains, just like normal people who probably lead normal lives, except that they're really, they have this like fandom for evil. it works, you know, a total convention for evildoers.
You know, it's funny that they all get along, because most villains, I guess, in real life would probably see villains as you know, the enemy or competition, and maybe that's true, but I liked how they just played it up that there's this whole subculture, you know, that we don't even know about, and it's just villains who are idolizing and starstruck by other villains, and they're going to this convention to get better weapons and to be better at their craft, and just
It's like actual conventions that we have. It brings people together with common interests. In theory, and until you know, someone's fandom gets way too unruly in the line, and then they have to shut down Markiplier, which really sucked, by the way. But anyway, so they're all united in how much they love villainry, and I think it works. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, anyone who has so been fun. To a convention, whether it's Comic-Con or any other sort of sub-con you are into, you know, Anime-Con or whatever, Cinema-Con, get it. If you have been to one, even for like a work convention where like, you know, the NAB, the National Association of Broadcasters convention, I mean,
that was
like,
pretty awesome.
As boring
Steel
as that could
Engineers
be,
Anonymous.
You understand the culture between these cons. And so I thought that was just, you know, very brilliant of them to do that, especially since cons nowadays, especially over the past, you know, decade, have become very prolific, and there's a con for nearly everything now. Even in the 60s, there were, you know, conventions, but I think it's even more relatable now, just because
Rotorama.
There's cons for everything. Rotocon.
Rotocon, the place where everyone loves us. We're not narcissistic at all, but yeah. So $300 a ticket, by the way.
No.
Student level. But yeah, Scarlet Overkill, what do y'all think? She has rocket-powered dresses.
You know, she was kind of a downer for me. Like, she was awesome, but at the same time, I don't feel that she was as bad as she was made out to be.
Well, you got to give her some slack. Sandra Bullock, this is Sandra Bullock's first time as a villain.
Well, no. Yes, it was her first time as a villain, but I think this was a great role for her. I liked her voice acting, but I just felt that, okay, she was labeled as this the biggest villain of all time, the baddest, and she was just supposed to be all of these things. And
but like, what did she even do in
the
film?
We didn't really see that from her. We saw all the spoils, you know, all of her, we'd seen all the things that she has plundered from other people, but I just didn't see her really being that, you know, amazing of a villain. And I thought she was eventually going to get to that point. She kind of turned around, but then she was almost so comical. And we talked about, you know, humor in animated films, but she went almost on the comical villain side rather than like the nefarious villain, that she kind of lost her edge for me, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think one of her main functions was that she could have been the Gru for the Minions. She could have been the perfect villain for them to serve, you know? And there's parts of her that are really similar to Gru in that she kind of has the same nose, you know, that kind of hawk nose, hawk beak nose. She's got awesome gadgets, a very eccentric vehicle design, much like Gru. You know, but the main, you know, of course, thematic difference is that she doesn't end up appreciating the minions like Gru does. And I remember watching the first Despicable Me film and remembering, you know, admiring how Gru sees his minions as like valuable team members. You know, we stole the giant Jumbotron. We almost stole the pyramids, and we're going to steal the moon, you know, and all that stuff. And he knows them all by name and stuff like that. But Scarlet looks like, appears to be, you know, so sweet and nice to them. And then she reveals her evil side, her evil, evil side, that she doesn't even consider the minions worth it.
Yeah, she turned on them rather quickly, which I guess did show that her, you know, she was evil this whole time. It was never about them. She was never actually looking for, you know, a henchman, which I think is funny. She had this big keynote at the very beginning, and to me it wasn't that great. Like, you know, usually keynotes are you're imparting wisdom on other people, but she was just there talking about herself, and I thought it was a lame way to introduce her. Because it just, it didn't seem really fluid or natural to me. But anyways, you know, she says, oh well, you know, whoever steals this jewel from my hand will be my new henchman. And I don't think I think she was so confident in herself, she didn't think anyone would actually do it. She was just going to go back to being solo with her husband. But they did.
Well, one thing, I saw some of the premiere for the Minions, and Sandra Bullock, she loves the Minions. And she's just like, it's been one of my biggest dreams. And she had even Minion shoes, that like stiletto shoes. I was like, those are freaking awesome. So shout out to Sandra for the part at the full premiere.
Yay. Good for her.
Well, and the thing is, I love Scarlet's house. I think the house is probably her biggest thing. It reminded me of Scrooge McDuck's money bin. Like, the moment you walk in and you could almost swim through everything that's going on.
What did y'all think about the music?
You know, I thought it was okay. I mean, but this film is set in 1968 America and England. And that sets you up for a wonderful soundtrack. And I did mm-hmm. notice the soundtrack, but I didn't go thinking, oh, I gotta own this soundtrack. You know, with Guardians of the Galaxy, that was the soundtrack that I went and purchased because I loved it so much.
Ooga,
it was
chaka,
just so,
ooga,
it was
ooga,
so iconic.
Ooga, chaka,
I felt like this one just sort of had the staples that you needed, right? Mm-hmm. But it wasn't anything
out of this ordinary. Totally tired out tracks. Mm-hmm. Like, for a six, they could have gone in such a cliche direction with, you know, the 1960s, but they had some good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, they had, obviously, the thing that caught me off guard was when they brought in Hair. And it's a musical that's in the 60s, and it was like, everybody, it was very irreverent.
Is that the one with the bodyguards? Or the
yeah, the bodyguards.
Buckingham Palace guards?
Uh-huh, and then they, like, throw off the hair. Yeah. Give me that beautiful hair. Long, beautiful hair, shining, gleaming, streaming, flaxen, waxing. And then I know, right? And then they also did a song from Just Singing in the Rain, which I was like, you know what? I can totally support you.
As long as it was not that song from Singing in the Rain, titled Singing in the Rain, then I'm fine with it.
No, it wasn't. But it was good. And I approve. But they also had some really other cool ones. So we had Happy Together.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one.
What else did we have?
You Really Got Me. That's the Ray Davies version. I think the Van Halen did it better. But that was after 1968, so that's fair.
There was the Revolution song by John Lennon and Paul McCartney.
I recognized Mellow Yellow during the credits.
Of course. Classic.
Mellow Yellow.
I feel they needed Big Yellow Joint. The Big Yellow Joint. Meet at the Big Yellow Joint.
Hey, you know what's a yellow 60s song that they didn't do? Was Yellow Submarine. Was that after? Was Yellow Submarine? I know nothing about the Beatles. Was that after 1968?
I don't remember.
They even had the Beatles in it.
They did.
They did.
They even did a cameo. That would have been perfect.
There were so many, like, 60s cliches that they did in this film that sort of, like, people laughed, and my mom was in the theater, and she was like, with the Abbey Road sequence, she was like, oh, that is so awesome. And I was like, no, it wasn't. Like,
no, it wasn't. It's the most cliche thing they could have done with Abbey Road.
But her reaction was awesome.
Well, all right. Hey, what'd y'all think of Herb?
I loved her. We talked a little bit earlier about John Hamm and his performance, but so versatile.
Yeah,
I was
very
impressed.
Excellent performance. John Hamm's pretty talented.
What were some of your favorite weapons that he came up with?
I think the hat took it for me, the hypno hat.
The Rastafarian hypno hat, yeah. That
yeah,
was
just
cool.
This big squishy thing.
The lava gun, it shoots real lava. And then the mechanical appendages, I thought those were
pretty
awesome.
Bob was cute when he was sailing around in that. And then we get sinister gadgets in the dungeon.
Those aren't particularly gadgets. Those are like
they're gadgets of
they're old fashioned gadgets,
right?
Gadgets
straight up
torture.
Go gadget guillotine. It's a one hit KO. But anyway, what did y'all think about that scene? We all saw it coming because it was in the previews.
Yeah,
you know, I didn't see very many previews for this, but I thought this was the most violent scene of the entire thing. I'm like, they've got him on the racks and everything. I'm like, holy crap.
No, the hanging part was what made me uncomfortable. But I mean, I was a little uncomfortable about it, as anyone should be when watching depictions of torture. You know, ladies, right. If you're on a date with a guy and he's laughing during this scene or like really interested in it, then, you know, steer clear from such turn away. You know, but it quickly became apparent that it was going to be fun and lighthearted. Like, it wasn't going to be...
See, I don't know. I never thought that the torture, even before it, you know, turned and became funny, I never thought that they were in any real danger. You know, they were minions. Yeah.
I wasn't, like, covering the eyes of the child next
to me. I was like, oh, that dungeon scene was horrible. I can't believe you showed that to children. Or me.
Yep.
No.
Or me. I'm offended.
Or me.
It's a scary tree. I'm afraid. But anyway, I really didn't. I thought the funny part was that Herb was like, by the way, it was me the whole time. I don't even know a guy named Blurb. John Hamm sounded way younger. Like he seemed like he fit the character, but it didn't seem like the character was a fit for the voice actor. You know how they do that sometimes in animation?
No, explain.
Well, how they, the movie bills, you know, the top billed actor, you know, we're going to have this celebrity doing the voice acting. And so they kind of model the whole character so that it revolves around the voice actor rather than the voice actor finding the character and then portraying it. Can you see the difference there? And especially with celebrity voice actors, you know, to the point where like a character even looks like the voice actor. I can't think of anything off the top of my head. But anyway, John Hamm was great.
Can we talk about King Bob and the Sword and the Stone?
Yes.
what a quick and easy way.
Sword in the Stone, but then again, there aren't actual minions.
Well, there's one in Orlando. There's one in Anaheim, too. Oh, which one's the real one?
There's also one in Hong Kong Disneyland.
Oh!
You know, I read an article by our friends at Animation Fascination, Jessica, and she had a great point. She was like, shouldn't that have been a bigger issue? I mean, it was King Arthur's sword. It was the sword in the stone, and they just brushed over it and used it as a quick plot device. And, you know, they weren't trying to be
anything.
That's
exactly what it was, a quick plot device to get from point A to point B. How do they get the crown in the most goofy way possible?
And they were so stupid. You think, yay, everyone loves the minions because they pulled the sword out of the stone. This is amazing. And they are so manipulated. And that's the thing. They are so loyal to the people that they serve and their masters that, of course, they were going, Scarlet! Of course they were going to give her, you know, the crown. And that's all she ever wanted, because even though she's this amazing baddie, she still, you know, grew up being this princess and never actually had that real crown to put on her head.
Yeah.
But she goes crazy once she gets the crown.
Oh, yeah. She gets a little power hungry.
So that's when it starts all wrapping up.
Yeah, yeah. And then we got Giant Kevin.
I did not like Giant Kevin. I thought that was sort of like the one thing that just took me out of it. I was like, really? We had to turn him giant? Yeah, I really lost interest in that last fight scene, especially when he turned giant.
Oh, all right.
I don't know. This whole ending sequence of how they, you know, beat Scarlet just didn't really do it for me.
Oh, they didn't just beat her once. She came back from the dead like more times than Hayao Miyazaki has come back from retirement. And I guess the writers were like, oh, we can't kill her off in an explosion like that. Hey, make her come back and then she'll get like frozen instead. Maybe even open up for Despicable Me 3, you know? And that's exactly what they do. Personally, I would rather get blown up than suffer from frostbite.
You know, I don't know why they had to do it in that sort of way, because they killed all their other masters in very gruesome ways. Didn't care. Cannon to the face.
Well, that's the French.
I'm just kidding. Well, that is the French. Well, I guess they have to make sure that somebody stops dying. They have to break the cycle. They have to break the cycle before they get to Gru so that we know that he has some hope and he's
maybe
not going
to
get killed.
Gru is just able to contain them well enough too, because he sees their flaws.
Maybe.
Plus, he loves his freeze ray gun. Mm-hmm. In the beginning of Despicable Me 1, he freezes half the town.
Yeah, exactly.
All in a day's work. Oh, also, I totally didn't catch this, but Dr. Nefario was at Villain Con.
Ah, nice.
I like Dr. Nefario, except for the fart gun. But anyway, I also there's this tiny little moment where they're trying to steal the crown, and that old blind dude is up there. I don't know why, but he was just so random and funny.
It's great times.
So I have one last thing to talk about, and this is kind of a big plot point, but the minions go from master to master, in search of the biggest, baddest villain to serve. And that was clearly established in this film. One master was gone, they went to the other one. So when Gru turns up in Despicable Me, and then he turns out to be good, why do they stick with him? Because they stick with a master until he dies? Even if he turns the right way?
Well, if you want to get down to technicalities, he did defeat the better villain. He did defeat Vector, so that makes him the most powerful villain. But he also turned good at the end, so that's interesting. I don't know. You got me. That's a good point.
All right, so then it wraps up. They meet Gru. Bada bing, bada boom.
Banana. Papagena.
And it all ends promoting Universal theme parks. Minion Mayhem.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Tell me more about that. I don't know that much about that.
I have never been to it.
How much mayhem will there be?
I don't know. So if you have been to this, I want you to send us a voicemail and tell us what you thought. Let us know how Minion Mayhem went.
Well, it would be cool if they had a Minionese app where you speak into it and it plays it back in Minionese.
This would be cool. Also, person, go out and create that app and send it to us.
We're like Scarlet Overkill. We get people to do those things for us.
They're called husbands. Okay, so moving on, I asked a listener Twitter question, and I don't know, maybe not enough people have seen this movie. The numbers don't say that, but I asked, what would you rate Minions and why? And we had one response, Jessica Angus, 6 out of 10. It had its moments and was better than I expected, but I feel they missed the chance to give the characters more substance.
Yeah, that's fair.
Absolutely. So going into that, what would you guys rate this film?
So for me, I definitely give this 3 stars. I guess 3 stars for each Three Stooge. It was really good. It doesn't, it wasn't a blow your mind deep, and it's not something that you should really go into it thinking about that. And it is kind of more geared toward the child. And I'm sure if I had watched this one, I was 6 or 7, I would have been like, Minions are awesome. I don't know. It needed more to really make me love this film, but all in all, it was good.
All right. So official Mason rating is 3.5 stars. Let's just say that 3.5 stars. This is how you do your animated cash cow. I mean, not gonna lie, it's the cash cow. It's got a huge market presence, and it expanded on the Minions idea without getting weird or overly dramatic, like we discussed. And also, I'll say it again: the animation was awesome. And the production techniques, like the surfacing, the rendering effects, and layout. I noticed the camera layout and camera direction was quite an improvement from Despicable Me 1. And, for me, it was one of the most original takes on your, typical side character epic film. And so my conclusion is that Illumination and Entertainment is pretty good at this. And for giving us something that's unexpected, for the most part. And so, yeah, 3.5 stars.
All right, I am going to give it also 3.5 stars. I went into this movie with very low expectations. I remember when hearing about this film thinking, a whole movie full of minions? I don't know. I didn't really like the minions so much in the first film, not as much as other people. So I went in with low expectations, and I was pleasantly surprised. I thought they did a great job breaking up the minions from this collective unit, this sea of yellow, and just focusing on the minions. And that it made it very digestible. It made it easy to relate to the three minions versus the whole society of minions. And I liked Scarlet Overkill. I thought she could have been done better. The overall plot, I enjoyed where it went. It definitely slowed down at the end. I thought the climax could have been done better. But, you know, I laughed. I had a great time. And I was pleasantly surprised. So I'm going to give it 3.5.
The judgment is decided.
And we have one voicemail from our friend Ryan P.
Become a patron and you too can have the power of the Thunder Tube in the palm of your hands. Hello, Rotoscopers. Ryan Pareto here with my review for Minions. Went into the theater, very low expectations. And that being said, my expectations were completely superseded and I was entertained. I did not think the quality, the cinematography, and the direction of this film was going to be up to this caliber. You know, Illumination Entertainment did not offer me up the most entertaining movies for me in the past. But this one achieved just that, and it speaks to the possible potential of future films. I mean, if this should be just a benchmark to say, be excited for what's going to come. I think like DreamWorks, they just need to find their How to Train Your Dragon or Kung Fu Panda, and they will be one of those top animation companies, and I am excited just for that. Also, that being said, this is a great film. It is probably one of the best Sandra Bullock films since, The Blind Side or Miss Congeniality 2. That was a joke. I like the film. I will give it a very hearty 3 out of 5 stars.
All right. Thank you, Ryan. I love hearing your thoughts about Minion. 3 out of 5 stars. It looks like we are all in the same ballpark for this one.
Woohoo. Yeah. So this is interesting what he said. I wonder when Illumination Entertainment will find their How to Train Your Dragon, you know, or their Kung Fu Panda.
I feel like they have. I feel like this is it.
Well, Despicable Me had a lot of heart.
Yeah.
And, gosh, we need to review that one. But, you know, hopefully they have something even better planned in the future. Aren't they working on Secret Life of Pets?
Yes, they are.
That one looked kind of funny. It was like a very honest look at pets.
Yeah, a lot of people are down on the trailer, but I'm pleasantly surprised. I'm going to enjoy that one, I hope.
Yeah, that was really cute. I don't know. I'm just going to sit here and wait for my master to come home all day. All right, I'll leave you to it. Oh, I love the bulldog who's sitting on he puts the cushion up on the chair, gets up on it, and he's happy, and then he's like, huh, huh, and he like runs over, barks at the bird, and then he gets back on, and he's totally content with doing the same thing over and over.
Yes.
All day. It's so true. It's going to be a really honest look at lives of pets.
For joining us for this episode of the Animation Addicts podcast. As always, find show notes and any links that I've talked about, any interviews, even the Secret Life of Pets trailer that Mason talked about, go to rotoscopers.com/99. Woo!
99.
We are on our 99th episode. It is done. It is in the bag. And our next episode will be our grand, you know, spectacular, our 100th episode. And we are so excited. We are going to be together for the first time ever. And we are going to be doing some sort of show. We're not sure what we want to do. If we want to do, you know, like not necessarily a best moments or just if we want to.
Oh, I was thinking the musical episode that we've been talking about where we sing everything.
Oh, yes.
That requires a
song
lot
and dance episode. Oh, we got to make costumes.
But what I want from you guys is for our 100th episode, we want to hear from you. So send in your voicemails telling us what the show has meant to you, maybe a favorite scene or moment or, you know, just anything, your thoughts about the show to celebrate 100 episodes and 100 more. Also, you can support the show by going to rotoscopers.com/Amazon. You can also, if you like listening to audiobooks, you can go check out a few of those there at rotoscopers.com/audible. And of course, rotoscopers.com/Patreon. And that is the way that you can join our super secret exclusive Rotonation.
It's actually so secret.
It's a ton of fun. There's a lot of fun things that we're doing. The community that's forming is just a great, and I love interacting with everyone there. Yay. Shout out to the patrons. So yeah, definitely our next milestone, we just hit our 250 milestone. We mentioned we will be doing live shows in the near future once we figure out our technical difficulties. But after that, when we reach 500, which is double where we're at now, so who knows how long that will take, but we will actually start on our off weeks. We will be releasing a weekly news show or a bi-weekly news show. So you'll get Animation Addicts 1 week and then the news show the next week. Because remember, we used to do news and it was so awesome, but just really dated the episodes. Well, this will give you an opportunity to hear all of us talking about that week's news in This Week in Animation. It's going to be great. I'm really excited. So thank you so much for your support. As always, it's completely optional. The podcast will always be free. So thanks for the support that you guys have always done for us.
Absolutely.
Really quickly, we have we've always been reading our 5-star reviews in iTunes, and something that's really kind of annoying about iTunes is that it doesn't show us the reviews that people do in other countries. So we only have been reading the US-based reviews. And so I went back and I pulled the larger markets, Australia, India, UK, Canada, and went to see what 5-star reviews we've had over the past few months. So I just wanted to give a quick shout out to Chris K. Rovers, who says, fun, insightful podcast. Lubot, he says, awesome.
Lubot.
C. Riddy Dipu. Jess B. And R.N.B. Bergava. So thank you so much for leaving those 5-star reviews. It means so much to us. You guys are the best. That is one way that other people can see the show. The more 5-star reviews and reviews that we have, the more that you rate it in iTunes, you know, the more other animation addicts just like you can get in on the action. So as always, you can find me, Morgan Stradling, on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. I'm at Morgan Stradling on all those things. You can find Chelsea Robson at her website, chelsearobson.com, at Chelsea Robson on Twitter. And of course, you can find the good old Mason on Twitter, Mason SMTX. All right. So guys, until our 100th episode, woo, I can't believe this is happening. This is really exciting. And I'm really excited to see Mason and Chelsea in person. And we're just going to do a ton of stuff while we were in Arizona.
Yeah. It's been like 6 years since I've seen Morgan just mm-hmm. about, and I've never met Chelsea in IRL. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to be nervous. First impressions.
We are going to vlog, so stay tuned. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, rotoscopers.com/YouTube, because we will be putting tons of cool videos that
also
we will be
Periscope.
Doing. And yes, we will be periscoping, so follow us on all those fancy things.
All right, until next time, everybody.
We are the Rotoscopers.
Well, this isn't a type of movie that, like, promotes philosophical discussion.
I would love to see us try, though.
Kevin was led by the spirit, not knowing beforehand what he should do.
Chelsea, you are recording?
Estoy grabando.
Chelsea.
What?
We only speak Spanish.
We should have
here.
International day. And Chelsea only speaks Portuguese, and I speak Spanish. Morgan speaks whatever they speak in Arizona, and
I also speak Spanish.
Yeah.
But the Argentine is not acknowledging that fact. Wait, where'd my tab go? Hold on. I think I just closed it on accident. Oh, I put it back here. I forgot. I put it away. And as a result, it just that kept deviating further and further over time. And as a result.
All I can say is just wait for the CG remake of Watership Down.
Oh, no.
Say goodbye to your precious, funny, comedic animated films.
Right? Well, the director of this, how do you say that?
It's Coifon.
Coifon?
Or Kufon. Kufon.
Hey, that's Kufon. Their own fault for spelling it all weird. I'm just kidding, international listeners.
Kufon?
Yeah.
Kufon?
Kufon.
Kufon.
Kufon. Okay.
Like when you tell Elvis if he's all right and he's like, I'm fine.
Cool. Yes.
Exactly.
I'm fine, honey.
Yeah, I was just using it as a blanket rationalization. There are obviously films that... Well, just Chelsea, edit it so I sound smart.
Chelsea, edit it so that I sound smart. Morgan needs a lot of help in that department. I'm just kidding. Just wait till we go live, Morgan.
Why are we going live?